Hey guys, we're going to get to the HSP SmackDown review in just a minute with your hosts, Jeff and Brian. But first, if you guys could wish one of our listeners a happy birthday, I'd really appreciate it. Her name's Jasmine, and she's a huge wrestling fan. She turns 28 on July 1st, and she asked for a skateboard for her birthday, so we need to make sure she has a happy birthday, guys. All you have to do is just send an email to her. It's wearahelmetjasmine@gmail.com. That's right, it's wearahelmetjasmine. Jasmine, J-A-S-M-I-N-E, at gmail.com. Wish her a happy birthday and tell her to wear a helmet. So she's going to get a skateboard, right? That means you got to be smart about it. You got to be safe. Wear a helmet, right? So go ahead. Wish her a happy birthday. Her name is Jasmine. Again, wearahelmetjasmine@gmail.com is the email. So Jasmine, happy birthday. Hope all is well. Hope you get what you want and you get that skateboard. But always be safe about it and wear that helmet. All right, let's get your HSP SmackDown review started right now.
The following is a presentation of the High Spot Podcast. Making their way to the ring, talking about the world of professional wrestling, the team of Jeff Martin and the trendsetter, Brian Perga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
The people have spoken, the people's podcast is back. This is the HSP SmackDown review with my tag team partner, the scoundrel Jeff Martin. I am the trendsetter, Brian Berger. Jeff, could you do any better than that?
I'm going to quit my intros, dude. That takes the cake, man. That is the bee's knees. What's going on, man? How you doing?
Dude, I've been doing great, believe it or not. You know why? The weather's getting warmer over here. Granted, I have no air conditioning, but I don't care after dealing with summer for this amount of time.
No,
and
that
winter
sucks.
Winter has been so brutal here in the Northeast, guys, in New York City metropolitan area. So I'm kind of happy that it's a little humid, it's a little sticky. That's what she said, I know. But I'm excited to talk about SmackDown because it was a little different take, Jeff, compared to what we've been used to last couple times, where it's been, you know, building up towards a pay-per-view. And granted, we will be talking as the weeks go by about Backlash Horror Show, is now that's being called. And I feel like every
pay-per-view Extreme Rules.
Extreme Rules. Horror show.
We already had a horror show in Backlash, so yes. I see why you're traumatized there.
Yeah, but a different feel towards SmackDown. But first of all, how are you doing? And what did you think about the beginning aspects when you first saw the show?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. We found out like last week that The Undertaker is calling it a career by watching The Last Ride, that documentary series on
the
WWE Network, and can't say enough good things about it. And, you know, a lot of people are going to say, hey, you know what, you know, The Undertaker, you know, he's saying calling it a career now, but, you know, wait till WrestleMania next year comes by and we'll see if he's singing a different tune. But from what we've seen right now, WWE is taking it as this is it for The Undertaker, and that the Boneyard match was the last match for Taker, and he calls it a career. And you could tell from the opening package that they had that tribute music video for Taker, and it was going to be a night where they celebrated the career of Undertaker as well, by hearing from a lot of WWE legends just talking about just the impact that Undertaker had on the WWE. And before we start off with the show, you know, I mean, we could have a whole podcast on The Undertaker's contributions to WWE and professional wrestling, but when you look at that tribute video, you know, what's going through your mind?
Well, what's going through my mind, Jeff, is a lot of nostalgia, because that's what it's about when you're looking back at it. And I told you this before, as Jeff and I were watching the documentary, not together separately, of course, because that would be weird.
It would be.
What I found about it was the fact that, you know, a lot of my favorite performers, wrestlers, have come and gone. You know, huge fan of Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels. The day will come when Chris Jericho will no longer be performing. But still, it's the mere fact that you know there's always a beginning and an end. But because Taker's had a 30-year career, Jeff, it's just like you never thought it would end. And this doesn't go with wrestling, guys. It goes with anything in terms of sports or things we've seen where you want that particular person to go forever. That's where you get the chance to wrestle forever, I feel. And just a huge level of nostalgia because he's always been that constant. And you know, I'm not even talking about in the ring, as many of these legends have talked about before, where the bar was set high in terms of performing, delivering for 30 straight years. Granted, there were a couple hits and misses there. One example, Johnny Gonzalez, that was a big miss, but at WrestleMania 9. But just a huge feeling of nostalgia and kind of going back, reliving my childhood. So it was a cool feeling to feel, to see, oh, wow, I was witness to a lot of that stuff that happened. And just like with anything, you know, the chapter was written, the book has ended, and now that chapter in my life and yours and a lot of people that grew up watching The Undertaker has closed now. So it's kind of bittersweet. I'm happy for the man Mark Calloway, but I am not going to lie. I will miss The Undertaker.
Yeah, and there was a lot of scenarios where we thought that it was going to be the end, right? We go there for WrestleMania in Orlando, and when he put the hat and the his attire down in the middle of the ring, kind of broke character there, where he went to say hi to his daughter and Michelle McCool, gave her a kiss. He kind of broke character, and we were like, "Whoa, this is it! Did we just see the last match of The Undertaker?" And that feeling in...
And watching the documentary, it was clear that it was going to be the last time.
And, you know, the feeling of leaving the arena, the stadium that day, everyone was, like, down. Everyone was, like,
grown
man,
men, women crying.
Yeah, we had, like, a couple in front of us that they were, like, tearing up and crying.
It's probably one of the weirdest WrestleManias, right, Jeff? Because usually WrestleManias, you leave on such a high note and excitement. Oh, my God, this just happened. Mm-hmm. The crowd's excited. And there's a lot of adrenaline.
Yeah, anxiety.
Yeah, a lot of adrenaline in the air. And that one was just so somber, like you'd gone to a funeral service.
Yeah. Usually they don't want to do that. They want you to leave with a smile on your face after WrestleMania, but that was not the case because we all kind of really felt like that was it. Again, the documentary was so good, man, so good. And I think what helped Undertaker finally come to the decision that this was it was doing the documentary itself.
And I've got a chance to ask you this. What was your favorite part of the documentary? Was there a certain part in terms, because this was a 3-year span, was there a certain part of the documentary that you looked at like, wow, that was really good?
Yeah, wow, there's lots of things, yeah. But I would say like kind of towards the, I wanted to see what his reaction really was towards the Goldberg match he had in Saudi.
Mm-hmm.
It came close to like ending his career.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like a few inches away from like having his head driven into the mat. That was one of it, but the other thing too was like the end and how like he came to the decision with it, you know, and how AJ was the guy who was going to be the guy. If it was going to be his final match, why not have it with AJ Styles? Shows you again how much the company, how much Undertaker, how much all the wrestlers, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, how much they have a high esteem in AJ Styles. So that build up to the end was awesome. But I think at the end of the day, though, Bri, I think the best thing about this was you got to see the real Mark Calloway.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this guy's so cool, so down to earth, really good guy, because he's got that aura, that presence that he himself built for like 25 years, 30 years. And then when he breaks it and you finally see who the man is, it really is refreshing. And it was really well done. And I cannot stress enough that if there's a docuseries nomination for the best this year or all time, it's got to go to The Last Ride, because it was well done, unbelievable. And I don't think any other documentary has got in depth on the character so much that we've wanted to see as in The Undertaker. And he shared so much, and it was just awesome.
It was awesome. Like you said, a lot of the legends had talked about The Undertaker and his impact on not just the industry, but also his impact with WWE, because a good portion of his career was there. I mean, he didn't just wrestle for WWE. He wrestled other places as well, but the majority of where his legacy lies is in WWE. So it was really kind of nice to see that. And then they replayed the Boneyard match from WrestleMania, which, again, was another interesting thing, because prior to all this, even in the documentary that you were watching on the WWE Network, The Last Ride, it was more of like this was going to be the one he wanted to have his last match against, because, you know, you want to end on a high note. A lot of times, whether it's athletes or professionals of any kind, it's very difficult for them to walk away because, you know, especially if you're walking away off something that, you know, you didn't live up to your own expectations, or it just didn't go the way you wanted it to. It's really hard to walk away from that. Most people sometimes don't get that moment, don't get that opportunity at a second time, because in the documentary, Undertaker mentioned it too, that his classic match he had with Shawn Michaels, he said to Shawn after the match, you know, I should have walked away with you because you weren't going to get any better than that, and it became kind of true. But the closest thing he could have gotten was with one individual. It was going to be AJ. Unfortunately, due to the pandemic, COVID-19 outbreak, that a lot of that stuff was canceled, because we all wanted to see that one more match in the ring, a wrestling match between AJ Styles and Undertaker. If anybody was going to make Undertaker look better than what he already was at that point in his career, it was going to be AJ. So, you know, in a way, we got kind of cheated from it, in a sense, I feel. But also, at the same time, we got to see something completely different, because it's been done before. It's been done on Impact. It's been done with WWE, with the Wyatt family and the New Day, where it's been, and also with Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton's last one I can remember, where it's the cinematic type of wrestling match, which, you know, a lot of them, in my opinion, like the Wyatt New Day was kind of a hit.
At the compound,
The Orton Wyatt was a miss, in my opinion.
How about the Matt Hardy Bray Wyatt one? Did you like that one?
That was okay, but at that point right now, I think it's clear to say that, you know, Bray Wyatt had been so off whatever momentum he had that you're kind of just like an afterthought in a sense. It might happen again at Extreme Rules, or it's going to happen again. We'll talk about that down the road in terms of what I'm referring to, but it's pretty interesting in terms of seeing Undertaker in that type of match with AJ. So I want to ask you real quick, we've discussed about it, we haven't discussed about it on this show, but real quick, your thoughts on the concept of it, and all around, did you like it, and you feel like that was okay for him to walk away from that, or do you still want that match? So three questions. Did you like it? What you thought the outcome was of it in terms of the production standpoint? And thirdly, do you feel like you still want to see that one more match between AJ and Undertaker in the ring?
Well, this is really the first time we've actually had to like react on the Boneyard match, right? So this is a really good chance for us to discuss that. And what I liked about the Boneyard match was that it was something new. And, you know, a lot of people panned it because, oh, again, you get the music in the background, you've got the little, you know, you can tell it's not wrestling, right? It's not the traditional wrestling match. But I think that with what happened with the pandemic, with the way everything was going, I don't think a match with in front of no audience was going to do it justice for The Undertaker.
I agree.
So I think that this was a good way to do it. It's kind of funny how they kept the Gallows and Anderson in it, right? I told you, hey, did they keep Gallows and Anderson in it?
Well, it's kind of hard to cut them out of it. They're a big part of it.
And so I liked it. I liked it because it was new. It was something different. It was a new direction. And hey, listen, usually sometimes WWE, when they have to adjust to something, you know, maybe it doesn't go well. But this really went well. And when you look at the documentary and you talk about how satisfied The Undertaker was with it. You know what's funny now? When I talk about The Undertaker, now I sometimes feel like I got to say Mark Calloway.
Exactly.
Right?
Because it is Mark Calloway now. Yeah, the Undertaker is gone.
Yeah. So he was happy with it. AJ Styles was happy with it. I mean, the whole company was fine with it. It was something cool. It was something different, and I wasn't one to pan it, even if it wasn't to my liking, whatever. But you got to see AJ, you got to see Taker there, you got to see all aspects of the Undertaker, and I had no issue with it. It was really well done. And, you know, if that's the way he went off into the sunset, riding off into the sunset, then so be it. My only thing is I just don't know Undertaker's ego, whether he needs an adulation from 80,000 people at WrestleMania to say goodbye. It's not a knock on the ego, but sometimes you just want to be able to say goodbye properly, because he's always done it for the fans, right?
Is it ego, though, Jeff, for the audience, or is it ego that he wanted to be in the ring one more time with AJ? What do you think it would be?
Probably,
is it the adulation of the audience, or the reaction from the audience, which is what performers live for, or is the fact that, you know, he would want to be in the ring one more time, having an amazing match and feeling good in the ring with AJ?
Now, when I say ego, right, it sounds like it's about The Undertaker and about him, but no.
We all have egos.
It's about him delivering that final performance to the fans. So I think that's what it is. I think that's what it is, delivering that final live performance in front of 80,000 people to say goodbye and have that proper send-off. Now, you can't have a better cinematic send-off than riding off to the sunset, right, after defeating your opponent like Undertaker did. But the next best thing would be to do it live, and it's that energy, it's that drug, it's that thing that you can't once you leave, you can't find it anywhere else, and that is the adoration of the fans, mm-hmm. that juice, that extra shot of adrenaline, which is performing live. So I think that would be the only reason why Taker comes back and puts a ribbon on it at a WrestleMania against maybe AJ Styles. I think we talked about it like a couple episodes ago, yeah. How that would be the perfect opponent. The match, I mean, wrestlers, when they talk about it fitting like a glove, right? When they get into the ring, I think it would, even if they got into the ring, I think it would have fit. I think it would have been tremendous. You can't compare it to anything that Shawn Michaels and Taker did, because that was in the ring. That was, you know, you can't compare the two. But still, though, AJ Styles, to me, and the Taker, they fit like a glove together.
Well, in terms of comparisons, AJ has been compared to Shawn Michaels a mm-hmm. lot, and even during the documentary that we watched, a lot of people were saying, you know,
closest
his
thing to
best
Shawn.
Yeah. Match prior to everything else. I mean, people wanted, you know, also say, you know, his match with Triple H. Okay, that's one thing, but at the same time, it's like his best match prior to towards the end of his career was with Shawn Michaels, and if AJ is the closest thing to Shawn Michaels, granted the two separate people, two separate different type performers, but their ability to storytell, you know, I think you're right. If it's like a glove, if he's that good with Shawn, there's no question he would have been that good with AJ. And we saw glimpses of it during the Boneyard match, because granted, it wasn't a real match. It was more of a fight, and which is fine. But yeah, part of me as a fan would be like, I still wanted to see those two in the ring one last time. But if this is the final one, which, you know, Undertaker has stated in the documentary it is, he rode into the sunset or the moonlight because it was dark that night on his own and a sense of closure. Real quick, thing I like the most about the documentary, there's so many things, especially the fact that you got to see the real
You
kind
of get the sense it's going to be our tribute to the Taker, because if you look at SmackDown, really not a lot of stuff going
on. A good majority of the show was about that.
Definitely.
So we will dive into what happened during the show.
But I feel like this is going to be our tribute to the Undertaker. So this is what's good. And what I do want to talk about, though, Bri, is like, before you get back to Taker, is like one of the things that I regret about that Last Ride documentary was them delving into the whole Kane Undertaker versus Triple H and Shawn Michaels, because I haven't really seen that match, mm-hmm. and I don't want to remember Shawn anything but, you know, his last match at WrestleMania against Taker at 26, right? But then I'm thinking about this, and I'm thinking like how Shawn used to say, you know, if I fight AJ Styles, because you know when that infamous face-to-face promo came out for Royal Rumble in, you know, in San Antonio, remember that one?
Yes.
And they had, and everyone was talking about, wow, Shawn Michaels comes back for one more against AJ. And Shawn was like, well, what happens next, right? Mm-hmm. So let's be honest. Shawn Michaels came back, huge payday in not even Saudi, he was in Australia, right?
Yeah, I think it's Super
right?
Showdown.
Super Showdown, right? So he comes in for the big payday. You can't turn down. You can't blame him, right? How about them? They should have focused Shawn Michaels versus AJ Styles at Saudi or in Australia or wherever, because that to me would have been more memorable than having him team up with Triple H and that disaster, that fiasco against Taker and Kane. That's what I was thinking. I was like, well, if Shawn's going to come back now, that's the money. That's the match that I want to see. That's the dream scenario match that I would have wanted to see.
Well, I think Shawn kind of explained it in the documentary too. And again, it depends. That's his perspective of it. He was coming back more to do one more with his buddies.
No,
you know, and honestly, let's be honest. When you compare it to Taker and Goldberg, the biggest thing that I was against with you is like, you know, when you have situations where you have individuals like that at that advanced stage in their life and career, they don't move like they did before, so you need to put them in the ring with somebody that can do the work for them to make them look just as good. So when you put a guy like Undertaker and Goldberg in the ring together, neither one of them are going to make the other one look good. This is a match that, you know, maybe 10 years ago would have been a joy to watch, or a joy to like to build up the anticipation. For the Shawn Michaels Triple H DX versus the Brothers of Destruction, yeah, 10 years ago would have been nice, but it was more of Shawn wanting to be there with his buddies and do it one last time. You saw the end result of it. And again, no offense to Shawn, at that stage in his life and that stage in his career, he still looked pretty good, although granted he couldn't jump as high as he used to. You know, the nip up wasn't as high as we saw vintage Shawn Michaels, and it was also really weird to see him bald. Kip up, nip up, whichever one they call it. I always change from time to time, but to see him with no hair too was also weird. He was bald as a cue ball. And I couldn't get away from looking at and staring at that. I haven't seen the whole match completely.
Nor will I ever.
Nor will I ever either. But to look back at that and then to go back to your point, like, why can you do it with AJ? I think clearly it's like it's different when you're doing it with people, I think, in your range, in your ballpark in a sense, mm-hmm. and to do with someone like AJ, who at this point he's in the prime of his career, going to the tail end of his career. He still can go really high level. And I don't think in terms of Sean's mentality, I don't think he would do himself any justice to go up against that, because he knew he can live up to that billing. We know it's Shawn Michaels, of course. At 50 or 60, he could do it better than most people in their 20s. I get it, but I think from his standpoint, he couldn't live up to that billing, because people would want to see the old Shawn Michaels, not just an old Shawn Michaels. Back to real quick about the one my favorite part about the documentary was real quick was this.
Real quick? Why do I have to go real quick? You got somewhere to be?
No, because we have other stuff to talk about.
There's no other priority right now than the HSP SmackDown review. So real quick, if you want me to take care of the rest of the show, so be it. If you got to go someplace, man.
Jeff, we both know you can't do that. So, you know, not only did the true person behind The Undertaker, Mark Calloway, but to me, what really stood with me was obviously the final chapter. I think it was chapter five. It was five, thank you. The mere fact that as they were building up, they were looking forward to a one-on-one match in Tampa in front of a screaming crowd of fans. Then it all got destroyed, and now they're going to do this whole Boneyard match. Two things. The mere fact that leading up to the Boneyard match, the amount of work that went into changing this swampy area full of alligators into what it ultimately came out to. So people who want to critique and like, it was garbage. Guys, look back at the work that WWE and AJ and Taker put in to make it look at least presentable to you. So to me, I had so much more respect. Like, I liked it. I liked the match when I saw it during WrestleMania. Looking back at it during SmackDown, I saw the whole thing again. I was like, wow, I actually kind of really like it the second time. Sometimes you want to step away from it and come back and watch it again, and you're like, you're nitpicking. Like, that was kind of stupid.
We're watching it the first time since we saw it at
WrestleMania. And that was dumb. But looking back at it a second time, I was like, looking at it again brand new, I was like, wow, that was actually pretty cool, like watching a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing was the mere fact that leading up to that, and it always seems this always happened to Mark Calloway, that it would always be something in his head prior to a match, especially after his matches with Shawn Michaels leading towards the end of his career, was the fact that Undertaker's brother had passed away.
Yeah.
And the mere fact for Taker to do what he did and perform at the level he did in that quote-unquote match, the Boneyard match with AJ, with all that weighing in his mind and his heart, wow, I had just a new level. If not, you know, the bars are raised high in terms of respect, in terms of wrestling, of where The Undertaker is, but in terms of as a performer and professional, to deal with something personal like that and then to be able to perform at that level at his stage in his career gave me just a new level of respect, not only for The Undertaker, but for Mark Calloway as well.
So you heard tons of praise by former WWE legends who talked about him. You had Of course, Edge and Christian, Bret Hart talk on Undertaker and his contributions to pro wrestling. You had you had people there also, the Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Batista.
Kurt Angle.
They talked about how important Undertaker was to WWE. So you got a lot of the voices, a lot of people there who honestly, you know, give their heartfelt thanks, and also they gave a high praise to Taker. You open up the show with the current WWE roster, and they're there, and they're clapping, thank you, Taker. And, you know, again, you know, part of me says, you know, this is great, but also part of me says, like, when WWE really pushes this, it's kind of leading to him maybe coming back. But, I mean, that's just the fan in me that's always saying, like, okay, they're really pushing this thing, and they really pushed it a lot in the opener. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, maybe, you know, but you never know.
Could it be that after we saw the Boneyard match and people were chanting, thank you, Taker, that the one little thing, the little jab out there was Baron King Corbin being a complete ass and really basically making fun and calling him an old man. We've heard it time and time again. So I think most people watching that and the fact that they were emphasizing that he's disrespecting The Undertaker, and then out comes out Jeff Hardy to defend The Undertaker because, of course, The Undertaker's not there, and that leads up to our main event later on in the night. You know, is it kind of planting that seed again?
I mean,
it's going to happen, planting that seed in terms of us as an audience and a fan that it could be possible. But with Corbin, I don't know.
Hey, I mean, Corbin's done a great job getting heel heat.
He is, AJ Styles.
He's not a lot of – yeah, exactly. That's – at the end of the day, that's the main thing. I can talk about all the other stuff, but at the end of the day, it's not AJ. It's not Sean. But I just think it's I just think it's getting heel heat, which is easily off of, you know, criticizing Undertaker just after he retired and everyone's heaping praise, right?
We're going to have people out there saying, you know.
And you could because you never say never.
That's the quote that people hate using, but it's the truth. Yeah. When it comes to professional wrestling, more than any other form of whether you want to call it a sport or entertainment, it's the only other thing where you can never say never. The Undertaker has made it clear in the documentary that he's going to ride into the sense that he has no more desire to get into the ring, but you never know when you get that itch. And Jeff, stop scratching my leg. That itch to get back into the ring.
Oh, man. Too funny, dude. I thought that was an open right there for me.
thought wrong.
It's a satisfaction. They really talked about Taker being satisfied. If he was.
And I'm happy because during the whole documentary, it didn't seem like he really was satisfied.
He felt incomplete, right? He was a dragon.
Oh my God, Triple H used the word dragon so many times.
It's Undertaker's favorite mythical creature, the dragon.
No, Triple H's favorite mythical creature.
That dragon, he's always... But it's whether Taker is fully satisfied. Now, will he be fully satisfied in 6-7 months? Once the Royal Rumble season starts coming around?
See, here's the thing. If they had that final match in the ring, I think Taker would have been satisfied. But because they didn't, I still think, as much as he said it, and you know, he'll probably stand by what he said, I still feel like he wants that one more match in the ring to finally call it an end. But you know, as time goes by, you know, time works against him. So
it's fitting.
I don't know if it's done.
To me, it's all about that crowd. To me, he got to say goodbye at WrestleMania with a win, right? WrestleMania is the Undertaker's yard, right?
Yeah, but we thought 33, that was the end too.
Exactly. But if he was going to do it, it was going to be a WrestleMania. It wasn't going to be for Undertaker to say Extreme Rules, that was going to be it. Listen, let's be honest. It was not going to be it because...
That would have sucked so bad.
It would because it had to be WrestleMania.
Wow.
Vince even would see the dollar signs. It's got to be Mania, pal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it was not going to be anywhere but Mania. Now, he did it. He said goodbye at Mania. But the only thing to me that it's missing, now whether they're going to do a whole Hall of Fame weekend dedicated to Undertaker and that's going to be, you know, his satisfaction, which I don't believe it is. I don't think it's his style.
Yeah,
I think it has to be at a WrestleMania. So the only reason why Taker would come back now is that one final goodbye to a 80,000-plus stadium jam-packed for WrestleMania, and I think that is the only way that The Undertaker comes back.
I agree.
And that's it. So, I mean, I love them planting the seeds. I love the cheap heat that Baron Corbin's getting off of The Undertaker.
He's great at doing that.
You suck, right? So
you're a bag of bones.
Mm-hmm.
You've been holding back talent like me, blah, blah, blah. We've heard it before. But again, it's great heat, and Corbin is a character so much that's been so overlooked.
Kind of tough to be held back when you kind of retired Kurt Angle last year at WrestleMania, right?
Exactly.
2 years ago, actually, yeah. I forget that the WrestleMania happened this year, too. But again, see, that's another thing, too. With this whole pandemic, too, like, I kind of don't like thinking about this WrestleMania,
it's true.
Yeah. So anyway, so then that's going to be our main event. Trendsetter is going to get Jeff Hardy defending the honor of the Undertaker against Baron Corbin.
Sometimes that's better than any championship.
Yeah. And then we get a four way match for the number one contendership to see who takes on Bayley at Extreme Rules. You get
The title's actually going to be defended at
Extreme
Rules.
Look at this. They've heard you, Trendsetter, and they're like, we got to. Screw the trendsetter, and we got to put this title on the line.
No, they wouldn't be. They'd be screwing me if they didn't defend the title. They're actually going to listen to me.
Well, okay, they're listening to
you. Because not only am I the trendsetter, I'm the conscious mind of professional wrestling.
I love it.
Have listened to logic where, hey, let's defend a championship. And honestly, Jeff, before we get into that, the number one contender match, the mere fact that there's going to be a match between Sasha Banks and Asuka, people are like, hey, that's a Raw thing. No, but Sasha Banks is on SmackDown. Now she's going to just jump across. Granted, we've already talked about the brand split. She's not going to just walk across the bridge, whatever you want to call it, and then just sign a contract. Really? So now SmackDown Superstar can challenge for a WWE Raw title? What the heck is going on?
Well, that's called Charlotte being out there. That's called Becky Lynch being out of action. And that's called needing depth on Raw for a proper challenger for Asuka, which shows you.
So what was the point, Vince?
Where is Bianca Belair in all this, man? And again, we're not Raw show here, but I mean, I'm sure they're going to talk about it. But
yeah,
goodness
definitely.
Gracious, can we get Bianca Belair? This is the problem where they bring people up, and it's basically for a storyline, and it's not for future purposes. And Bianca Belair is is wasting away, withering away.
And Jeff, I am so tired.
I'm running it wrong.
I am so tired of the fact that, oh, well, you know, we're in a situation now where our major stars aren't available. So what are we going to do? Okay, they're not available. Then you know what? Make some new stars. Give people that haven't had that opportunity. Because granted, if things were, in essence, quote unquote, back to normal,
yeah,
Bianca Belair would have been lost in the shuffle. Give her this opportunity. What is your problem? You want to create, you want
that
depth?
Stock.
You want depth, then create depth. You have
that
a talent in her. But
Royal
no,
Rumble
we're going to bring Sasha Banks. We're going to keep recycling the same damn storylines over and over again. Okay, makes a lot of sense. Let's get into this number one contendership match.
Yeah, so it's a good match.
I
thought Alexa Bliss was going to win this, so we'd get Bayley and Alexa Bliss. But they went in the direction of Nikki Cross. She gets the victory.
Alexa Bliss.
Let's take it like 10
just
seconds.
Not 10.
5 seconds?
3 seconds.
Here. 3 seconds.
Alexa Bliss.
All right, so
Ryan Cabrera.
Yeah, Ryan Cabrera. Who would have thought? Go figure. So
you're stuck on thinking of Alexa Bliss right now.
Yeah, so Nikki Cross becomes the number one contender, and we're going to get that match. It's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do here, but let's be honest. This is just a fill-in here because, you know, Bayley's going to come out victorious at Extreme Rules horror show. But my question to you is, going back a little bit, did you like that little tease that Sasha and Bayley did on Raw where Sasha was like, I want a title too? And you kind of thought she was going to challenge Bayley, but you knew she was going to challenge Asuka.
Well, Jeff, we've talked about this during the High Spot podcast, and now we're obviously talking about it here during the HSP SmackDown review that I think we even said this in the first show when we did this. This is a rivalry, or this is a switch, or whatever the case you want to say, that's been out there for so many years. To me, the level of interest and now desire to have this actually happen, you know, if it does, cool. But I have no emotional investment towards it whatsoever.
When the turn finally happens, I'm not going to be.
I'm not going to be whatever.
There's no shock value.
You
want
to talk about slow build. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, and yes, guys, we're that old. Back in the 90s when I used to watch wrestling, they would have storylines that would last for a year. This has been lasting for more. My math is wrong on this. I know it is. But more than 4 or 5 years. We've been waiting for this thing to happen. And it hasn't happened yet.
Well,
so
I won't say four. It felt maybe like 2-3 years.
Okay, 2-3 years. It felt like 4 to 5 years to me because you've been waiting to see this as Bayley was a babyface and Sasha was a heel when the turn was going to happen. Now they could be in the reverse aspect of it because Bayley's done a good job of being that annoying champion. Just by a sense, that's probably her personality, that she's really annoying and she does such a great job at it. And if it happens, great. And then they're slowly building, I want another title. So, you know, there's no question in my mind that, you know, it could be the scenario where we have them as tag team champions and them as double champions of individual women's brands, although Sasha is not on Raw. But again, you know, the lines are blurred anyway, so who cares right now what I'm talking about? So that could actually happen. But that is something I'm not really concerned about. And you're right. This just seems to be a filler match because although it's cool and I'm happy to see Nikki Cross in this situation where she has a shot at the title. And Nikki Cross, what an amazing person. She's such a
sweetheart.
Amazing person. So it's great to see her in this position too, to have an opportunity to fight for a title. But we all kind of feel too, like Jeff just mentioned, it's kind of a filler. It's going to be more like Bayley's going to be like, I've beaten everyone on the SmackDown roster, which is true, except I haven't faced Sasha, and it'll eventually lead to that. And when it happens, oh well, I guess we'll talk about it. But you know, in terms of being excited for it, it's not going to be. But one more thing I want to say too, it's like, hey, I have to give a lot of credit to, and I've already given it to Lacey Evans. I think she's doing a great job in the ring. She's getting really good in the ring. I also have to give it to Dana Brooke too. You know?
I was going
to
ask you. That's great. It's the mentality guy here.
Yeah, there's
whose stock. Whose stock do you think is on the rise? You think Dana Brooke at the end of the day is going to have more stock than Lacey? Or you think Lacey over Dana?
Oh, I think Lacey over Dana right now because I think still as much as Dana Brooke has improved and gotten better, and now she has more of an opportunity to be more on TV more regularly since there aren't a lot of people available at the Performance Center. I think her stock will rise, but in terms of Lacey, I think Lacey's taking it to that next level. She plays that character really well in terms of how she goes out there because I think that's kind of really her as well to a degree, and she's just gotten so much better in the ring. So it's so cool to see that because to me, guys, I'm sorry, I'm the artsy-fartsy kind of guy. Sean would say, you know, I like to see improvement in the ring, not only as a character, but to see your work improve in the ring as Lacey's has, and also to see Dana, too, improve. I'm happy because, you know what, that's what it's all about. It's about continually getting better so that depth that we're talking about, and not the kind of depth you're thinking about, Jeff, the depth of that women's roster and just the roster in general, where we're talking about the men's roster, the women's roster, the tag team division. You just need more people to work together to get better so that, you know, when there are opportunities there that are presenting themselves for, like, Nikki Cross, who's always been good in the ring, now you get to showcase it better. So looking forward to that match.
Then, of course, your chair over there, you're doing a great job with
squeaking.
No, that's
my back.
Is it your back?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm feeling it, guys.
Really?
Yeah.
It's the humidity? Is it the, what is it, the summer?
It's the humidity. It's just the fact, Jeff, that I got a little bit more whites in my beard now, and I'm just getting up there. I'm not a spring chicken anymore.
No.
A full-blown rooster. If you guys look at my hair, I got a full mohawk going. So I'm a rooster right now. I'm like the red rooster, except though I actually can get over.
You do on this podcast so well, Trendsetter. You get the New Day and Lucha House Party teaming up, of course, against Miz, Morrison, Cesaro, and Nakamura. Now, one thing I didn't say last week is that as much love as I got for Cesaro and Nakamura, you got to stop yelling at the announcers because the announcers have absolutely no control over matches. And, you know, it seems like to me...
It's the cheap heat.
It seems to me like just the complaining to the announcers just at the end of the day makes no sense. I get the whole when Bret Hart complained to Vince, right, and he knocked him down. But I just don't get the complaining to announcers.
So good too.
It was. I don't even think Vince knew he was going to push him that hard. But
that was actually the start of a McMahon character.
Yeah.
People want to say it's Austin? No. Yeah. Bret started the Mr. McMahon.
But it just makes no sense to, like, complain to the announcers.
It's just
you don't put us on. Because they're showing the stuff that happened last week. I give kudos to Nakamura and Cesaro for the attack on the New Day. But... At the end of the day, though, again, just that little nitpick about, you know, you're complaining to announcers, to Corey Graves and Michael Cole, you know, I mean, what's that going to do? You know, like, beat up somebody back there, Adam Pearce, who unfortunately has coronavirus, I think. Beat someone up back there that's got, like, some the matchmakers or something like that while you're not
on. Beat up the ring announcer, beat up the timekeeper. Don't do it to the announcers. But, again, I just feel like right now they're the extension because, you know, you don't have Triple H coming out or you don't have a general manager anymore. Granted, thank God we don't have general managers anymore because that was just a terrible idea in my opinion.
If you're going to do it, have some good ones and give them something more than just coming out with that and looking like goofs.
Yeah, I just think the idea doesn't work. And, you know, Bayley and Sasha have been doing the same thing too. They're just, you know, nipping and attacking. I think that's just the thing to do for that cheap heat type of mentality.
Yeah, that cheap bully thing. I understand. But, again, the announcers are not going to, you know, make the matches. But, anyways, the Miz gets pinned by Grand Metalik.
It was a good match, though.
It was a good match.
I do like tag team wrestling.
Big E,
I wasn't complaining.
Big E is the freaking man. Give him – I like the New Day, okay, but it's run its course.
Yeah, you've talked about
that
before.
You know, give Big E either – he's either going to be good as a face or a heel. I want to see him as a heel first because it's going to be so unexpected because everyone loves Big E, and, man, he would be a top heel right away. But give him a singles push, man. Like, good Lord, the man needs a world title run or something, man. Like,
it's been so cool, like – kind of the gist of what we're talking about watching people improve time and time again. Like we mentioned Sheamus, who wasn't on the show, by the way. So much of the toast.
What happened to that toast? But again, a lot of stuff was redone because of the whole COVID stuff. We'll get to that at the end of the show.
Yeah,
but
like for mere fact of him improving so much, coming leaps and bounds to where he started. Look at Big E, too, from where he was in WWE.
Big
and then
E?
He came in as Big E.
And, was that Jericho, remember?
Yeah, he's got an E for a name. You know, Big E. He's only got a letter for a name. And yeah, it's true. And that's all kind of what he was. He went through situations where he was a singles competitor. He won the Intercontinental title, but really didn't know a lot about him in terms of know his personality. When he came to the New Day, it was literally he made it gold himself, and you're right. He's at the stage right now in his career where, you can continually do the same thing. It's going to sell merchandise. It's going to sell tickets if people are actually allowed in the building at some point down this road that looks like it's never going to end, but maybe it'll be at some point to have audience back in the ring again or back in the buildings. But yeah, you're right. He's just so, I call him like a chameleon in a way, because he can just go through so many levels of making you laugh, make you kind of hate him too in a certain degree. He's just been so good, and you're right. I think eventually sooner than later, that's going to happen because
I don't think it's sooner than later. I think later, but I think the idea is to get the New Day back together. And what I would do is I would just have Biggie have enough and then just turn on both of them.
From this point, Jeff,
because you can get Woods and Kofi, you know, together. That's fine. But I would want to see him turn on both. I think the best spot though, Trendsetter, was having an opponent for Kofi in his title run, because one of the things that lacked to me was when Kofi was a champion was that opponent, and I think a matchup with him and Biggie would have been great, a heel Biggie, you know, and that would have been great. But I think you just said separate
the New Day, right? You don't have to. You know why? Because the New Day is what now? It's Kofi and Big E.
Mm-hmm.
So when Xavier comes back, you can still have the New Day, but it'll just be Xavier and Kofi now. It won't be a three-man trio anymore. Big E will make himself get out of the situation and now go on his own type of run. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to separate the New Day. What you're trying to say, I think, is get Big E out of it now because he has star potential written all over him.
That's true. That's a way that they can keep the New Day still, you know,
it's like the saying goes, right? That's a way where they can have their cake and eat it too.
Yep. So, yeah, so but I would definitely have Big E eventually turn on them, and I think that maybe they're waiting for Xavier Woods to heal up.
You got an E for a name, folks.
So, you know, good for a Lucha House Party, I guess.
You were going to say Lucha Underground.
Lucha Underground. Lucha Bros.
No, I like it. They're really good.
Boy, The Miz goes from challenging for the Universal Championship. Again, pinned by Grandma Talik. So, yeah, there you go, Miz. That's how it goes. That's how it goes for Miz and Morrison.
Well, you know, Miz has so many things to do. He's got a show.
What's that show now? It's coming. I don't want to put you on the spot. What's the name of that show he's doing?
I don't know. I don't remember. Bonsai or something like that. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
It's a USA show, and it's about, you know, it's water sport and whatever.
I was talking about his other show, like Miz and Mrs. or...
Oh, yeah, the Miz and Mrs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know that's the name of the show, honestly.
Stellar.
But no, he's got so many things to do, honestly. Right now, at this point.
I never miss an episode.
I think at this point in Miz's career, the last thing he needs to worry about is stuff like that. I think right now they're it's evident they want to keep Miz and Morrison together. So.
Yeah. Braun Strowman with a head-scratching promo. I liked the end of it. Didn't like the beginning or middle. But I like that Braun Strowman towards the end, and then you get that, you know, double audio where him and Bray Wyatt are laughing. They're getting sinister. Braun Strowman's got to go back to that dark place that he tried putting away in a lockbox, and he's going to bring it out now, and he wants to, you know, get that sinister Bray Wyatt to come out. So I love the ending. I liked where Braun took it, but I did not like the beginning nor the middle.
But the end was good.
The end was good.
Let me get this straight, though. This whole scenario where he's been holding back the sinister type of mentality he's had, and he's locked it away ever since he told that story of Bray Wyatt being bit by the snake
in his face
and laughing at it. So this whole time...
Multiple times, by the way.
Multiple times, mm-hmm. Yes. And realizing that he is the devil himself, Bray Wyatt. First of all, I thought it was Vince McMahon,
You're the devil himself, it's Bray Wyatt.
I would say Vince has got a little bit over Bray Wyatt, in my opinion.
The way Vince has been acting the last few months.
True.
Makes a strong push
over Bray Wyatt. I kind of chuckle a little bit about is the mere fact that, you know, he's been holding back this type of mentality, but what has he been doing this whole time leading up to this? He's been destroying people, like literally.
Yeah, but not that same Braun that you saw a couple years ago that, like...
Well, that same Braun I saw a couple years ago, Jeff, with the black sheep mask, that guy couldn't wrestle. That guy, I called him...
This is a better Braun.
I used to call him Braun Greenman because he was that green. It was true.
I remember
that. You know, I would call him Braun Greenman when I write articles describing SmackDown reviews, and he was just terrible. Like, he looked like every time he walked, his feet were going to break out from underneath him. He's a strong man, didn't know how to move in the ring. He got good footwork. He improved tremendously in a short period of time, which just showed you, one, the talent he had that I didn't see he had. I just thought he was a big man, and the ability he had to talk in the ring and create stories. So I give him credit for that. But the mere fact that, dude, you were killing people and in that mean, sinister spot way before you're supposedly holding it back. So, you know, the scary thing, Jeff, for me is that, okay, if that was tamed, what are we going to see at Extreme Rules in terms of him finally letting it all go? And again, this goes back to what we're talking about with AJ and Undertaker, Jeff, where, like, you know, it's going to be a cinematic type of match, which, you know, during that situation, that's what you were provided. In this case, I think it works because to have Bray Wyatt and Braun Strowman. Granted, they were in a ring before as just Bray Wyatt versus him. The funny, you know, fun house type of Bray Wyatt getting beaten by Braun Strowman. To have this, I think this is the only way you can really go with a Braun Strowman-Bray Wyatt match, to have it cinematically done that way.
That's a way to go. It's a way to do it. And you know what? You know what Swamp Bands play?
Swamp Bands playing the Swamp?
Really inside there, but
doesn't matter. It's our show.
But I will say this: it's a way
to
go.
Swamp Bands playing the Swamp.
It's a way to go to do this match, cinematic, right?
Would that be the way you would go, or would you want to see them in a match? Because, you know, in my opinion, I've already given it, but would you rather see them in a match, or
I like
this
it.
Idea?
I like it because there's so many ways to go, because it's Bray Wyatt, it's The Fiend, and it's Funhouse, Firefly Funhouse Bray, right? So this is going to be...
No, this is Bray Wyatt.
No, but I'm saying there's three characters.
Oh, yeah,
so,
yeah.
So this is Bray Wyatt, the Follow the Buzzards.
Bray Wyatt.
And this is going to be good. And you know, at the end of the day, I'm thinking, too, is that this is going to save a lot of... it's going to prolong a lot of careers, because, you know, maybe the best thing that could happen is this pandemic, because given WWE an alternative to let's go about these matches and let's, you know, maybe save some of those bumps in the card for some of these wrestlers, you know? And
well, if you ask Taker and AJ when they did their match at WrestleMania, they were feeling it.
Well, yeah.
There wasn't that adrenaline that was going. It was kind of going
Taker
ups and downs.
His arm cut by kind of pulling a Goldberg, right?
Yeah, that's what I think it's going to pull the Goldberg.
Basically. Right, it's going to happen. But it's going to prolong, to me, bumps, whichever way you say it, right?
I think careers, like you're
careers.
Right, and also storylines.
Yeah,
prolong story
so
lines,
I think this is fine. I'm going to be curious to see how it's done, because now this is Bray and Braun. Bray has had the experience, right? So this would be Braun's, no, it would be Braun's second cinematic, because he did the New Day and the...
Yeah, so they're both familiar with
it. So they're both familiar with it, right? So I think
I'm
just curious how it's going to turn out. I don't doubt that it's... I don't doubt that this match is going
to
be good.
And with that, to the point that I think that's probably one of the benefits, mm-hmm. too, because it draws you to interest. It interests you how they're going to do it.
Plus, I like what they've done with Braun, because Braun was doing these stupid dances with New Day. I mean, I believe he did some stuff with the New Day and dancing. And,
yeah.
You know, that Braun was like, oh, babyface Braun. And, you know, oh, man, I was just like, typical what they do with a heel big guy. They make him do these things. And,
yeah, they do it with Braun. They do it with
Drew
McIntyre.
I love Big Show, but you know, like Big Show's the main example of what they do to big guys, right, when they turn them face and stuff like that. And so I was like, oh, man, Braun. But I like where this Braun is going. Like I said, I didn't really – the story went a little too long, but I like that Braun is going back to that, you know, sinister Braun to match the sinisterness of Bray Wyatt, and I'm looking forward to this match. It's going to be obviously cinematic. It's obviously going to be called Extreme Rules Horror Show, so that's going to be the main focal point, and this looks like to be the main event at Extreme Rules, and you know, let's go for it. Let's see what happens. But they've had a good track record of the cinematic performances, except Money in the Bank, which I did not like at all. But I'm going to mm-hmm. be curious to see, and I'm going to be all for this match.
Do you think this is going to be the future down the road again? Yeah. Like they're going to come out because guys, we used to watch pay per views when pay per views were popular back then. Now they don't exist anymore. It was called In Your House, and they brought it back for NXT for mm-hmm. one night. For a takeover, which is kind of cool to see the old set and stuff like that, if you're old enough to remember it, guys. But
just go to NXT and see what they did.
Yeah, for Jeff and I, we would watch these shows called In Your House, and they would always have a theme behind it. In Your House, Revenge of Taker, and In Your House, Beware of Dog. It just these ridiculous phrases.
In Your House, and International Incident.
Yes, International. It just got ridiculous because you're like, what more can you say? And we're the idiots that forced our parents to buy it. The cable bill is ridiculous.
Good friends, better enemies.
Yes, it was ridiculous. And now it seems like the same theme now is coming back, because you had Backlash, the greatest wrestling match ever, called that. And then now it's now Extreme Rules Horror Show. So you think that's going to continue
you know
on?
I hope
until
so.
It changes?
I hope so, because it'll be the main focal point. You're getting this is going to be the main focal point. All right, cool. You know, that's fine. I don't mind at all. I think if they go back some things when you go old school don't kind of make sense to this, to name it something, I have no problem with it. I think it's this is going to be the main focal point. This is going to be, you know, what it's going to be centered around, and I'm looking forward to it. I really do. And like I said, like I like this Braun Strowman. I like, you know, him with that laugh and everything like that. And listen, I trust Bray Wyatt in doing these things. He's very creative, and I think Braun following his lead will be really good. So, you know, I look forward to this match, and I like what they're doing with Braun So I'm all for it. You know, we'll talk about whether we think there'll be a title change, but for now, we got the thumbs up for this feud. And now, Jeff Hardy versus King Corbin. Jeff Hardy gets the win with a Swanton Bomb. A bunch of wrestlers out in the not only in the audience but also around the ring. I thought when we came in, I thought it was gonna be like a lumberjack match, but you had the women talent out there too. It was all in support of the Undertaker's legacy, and Jeff Hardy, you know, is able to get the victory. And then, of course, that heel heat where you have Big E, you know, doing his finisher. Then Matt Riddle is there,
too. Well, the heel heat started with Baron Corbin attacking Jeff after he lost, which led that, you know, Big E didn't get heel heat.
No, he didn't get heel. No, that heel heat where you... Well, that baby face, I guess, love where you just pounce on the heel after he attacks the baby face. That's what I meant.
Yeah, so you had Matt Riddle, Big E, you know, Braun Strowman. Mm-hmm. They all did their finishers basically, and towards the end, all of them standing on the apron applauding. And then he had an image of the Undertaker on the Tinytron.
The Tinytron.
And Jeff Hardy doing the classic Undertaker, going down on one knee, putting his hand up in the air. Did he stick his tongue out? I don't know. But I have to look back on the replay of that. But then paying an homage to the Undertaker. Because, you know, although we talked about some of the matches, and I'm sure next week they'll be building up even further the storylines, although they did do it for this episode, of what's going to happen at Extreme Rules. I'm not stuck in Backlash anymore. Extreme Rules Horror Show. It was really a show to pay honor to the Undertaker. And, you know, and again, Jeff, it's funny. Not really funny, but it's kind of... bittersweet because, you know, you had a huge send-off years ago with Ric Flair, the audience cheering, the music, the emotion behind it, the tears that were real. And it would have been nice to see that with The Undertaker as well, to address the audience.
Damn you, coronavirus. Damn you, I say! Anyways, so there you go. That is your show. And Trendsetter, listen, I gotta say one thing. Listen, whether this is the finale for The Undertaker or not, you know, people will always have their theories.
Do you believe it is or not?
No.
I don't. No, me neither. I don't think so either.
I don't. But again, that's for another show.
It's like Conor McGregor retiring from MMA. Heard this before.
Yeah. So this is going to be bittersweet, like it was, because if this is the end for Taker, then it was one heck of a career. I mean, what did Edge say? He got the most of it for 30 years, man.
He did.
And
and in all honesty, too, us as the fans got it for 30 years as well.
All different kinds of renditions of
The
Undertaker.
Damn it, Jeff, let this be it. You know what? And not being selfish because I want to see him back, but let this be it because I emotionally cannot take it anymore.
I thought
it was done at 33. I'm not going to lie. As Ric Flair said, I had a tear in my eye that night when it was all over, thinking that this was the end. And to see him come back and pack time again, I'm like, you know, why? Why? Stop doing this to me. That's like your ex-girlfriend showing pictures of yourself on social media and saying, hey, I miss you, or I was thinking about you. Like, why are you throwing that back in my face? I've gone over the fact that I can continue life without you. Mm-hmm. Don't do this to me again. That's all I say, man.
But again, I just want to, again, say thank you, Taker. And, you know, listen, man, I mean, we could have done a whole podcast and just, you know, The Undertaker's career. Could have done maybe like five episodes here, but...
I wanted to ask you this before we end the show, too, and I know it's a very broad question, Jeff, and, you know, excluding the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match, what was your favorite Undertaker match from watching him for 30 years? One of your favorites that you remember watching, like, I really liked that match, besides the Shawn Michaels Undertaker at WrestleMania?
Him and Brock Lesnar.
What
in the cage,
view?
In the cage, man, Hell in a Cell. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that was a good one.
That was wow. He always worked well with smaller guys, right? And which is they emphasize that a lot in the series. Him and Kurt Angle, I would say him and Edge was a good one too. But I liked him and Brock.
Two.
I liked him and Brock. They had good chemistry and the respect for one another that they have outside of the ring. Is what also makes it good. But that Hell in a Cell match, I remember him with Brock Lesnar.
Well, it's funny you say that because mine are two with the same individual, and one of them was in Hell in a Cell. So, actually, it had to be three. I'm sorry. I'm changing numbers here. It had to be three. One, the Boiler Room Brawl with Mankind. That was amazing. I loved it. Then I was going to say with him again at King of the Ring. Granted, yes, but then first best match prior to the Boiler Room Brawl, because I thought from a theatrical standpoint that was cool. But my favorite match with his was, granted, it was Mankind and King of the Ring 2, and they nearly killed Mankind. My God,
damn it, the suspense is killing me. Who is it?
Shawn Michaels and Undertaker, Bad Blood.
Oh,
that
yeah.
First ever
that's,
Hell in a
that's
Cell
my
match.
Favorite. That's,
and then Kane. That's got to be Kane. That,
that's my favorite Shawn Michaels Taker match. Yeah. It's not the WrestleMania matches. It's it's Bad Blood, Hell in a Cell. The first ever Hell in a Cell.
First ever Hell in a Cell match.
That was my favorite one. I loved WrestleMania 25. I loved the one after that in 26. But my favorite Taker and Shawn Michaels match is Bad Blood in your house. In your house?
No, it's just Bad Blood.
No,
it wasn't called. They stopped doing the In Your Houses back then. It was just called Bad Blood.
But they had the, they didn't have the In Your House set.
No, no, no.
No?
Oh, dude, no.
No.
Where are you at right now? No,
I don't know.
They didn't have that. No,
oh,
exactly.
I just see him carried. All right, cool. But still, that was my favorite. That was my favorite Shawn Michaels Taker match, and that about wraps it up, Trendsetter. I mean, we could go on and on about the Taker.
Hey, great show, not just for the SHP SmackDown review, but great SmackDown show, although it was more of a tribute show. It just think had a lot to do with us just kind of reliving memories and really being thankful for an individual that's entertained us, Jeff, for 30 years.
Yep, and we'll see what happens next week as far as what the coronavirus has done to WWE's taping schedule. So we'll see what happens again. You can't really blame him for the toast to Sheamus because, again, that's something that they had to re-switch a lot of things around. So, you know, we'll find out what happens next week. And if we got to talk about something else or maybe do another tribute to Taker or maybe a tribute to AJ, we will do so. But we'll be back here with you guys next week. Want to thank everyone. Want to thank everyone that's on the unofficial WWE podcast. Matt, who does the Raw Reviews, Wrestling Nostalgia, Saturday Night Week in Review, alongside great talents like Mary Grader, Ashley Mann, Anthony DeMarco. You got the AEW review with Jeff Johnson. How about Orange Cassidy in the in a top billing against Chris Jericho?
Yeah.
That's interesting. And then NXT review by Zach Smith. A great triple threat match. We saw Keith Lee advance, and he's going to take on Adam Cole at the Great American Bash, I believe. So, so much going on in the world of wrestling. And again, we just want to say here, thank you for listening to the show. You can follow us at all our social media at High Spot Podcast. We're going to give you 1 second here to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Okay. And now, Trendsetter, again, we will bid you adieu.
Yes, we bid you do. Guys, also make sure you catch us and also like us and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We've done a lot of great content on there as well with not just wrestling but other things we find entertaining, which I'm sure you guys, the crew, will find entertaining as well. Also, my Adventures with the Trendsetter series, miniseries is there, plus a lot of things that Jeff and I have planned in the future to put on our YouTube channel. So please give us a like, give us a thumbs up, subscribe, hit that notification bell. You will not be disappointed because you know what? That's the last thing we want to do to you guys is disappoint you. So for my tag team partner, Jeff Martin, I am the Trendsetter, Brian Berger. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the HSP SmackDown Review. We thank you so much. And remember, if you haven't figured it out by now, then damn it, you're going to figure it out eventually. That we do this for one reason and one reason only. We do this for you,
the crew. Thank you, Taker. Thank you, Taker.